Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
With thousands of federal government workers still caught in the crossfire of the partial government shutdown, communities of color are likely taking the hardest financial hit. That's according to organizers of a town hall in Prince George's County. WAMU's race and identity reporter Sasha Ann Simons has more.
Come on, give them a hand.
Senior Pastor Reverend Tony Lee does his best to lighten the mood at a town hall inside Community of Hope AME Church in Hillcrest Heights, Maryland. The event drew around 300 furloughed federal workers of color. Some brought their children. Others, like Daryl Lomax, came alone to get help.
When you live in a paycheck to paycheck, you're already hurting.
The 53-year-old African-American man stood in line at one of a handful of information booths. For the last decade, he's worked with NASA. Now, because of the shutdown, Lomax is considering applying for unemployment benefits.
I'm going to try to do the unemployment and see how that works out.
Nearly 40% of federal employees are minorities, according to the Office of Personnel Management, and 18% are African-American. Organizers say minority federal workers are feeling the pinch because many work low-wage jobs and are federal contractors who aren't guaranteed any back pay when the shutdown is over. That's why some federal workers at the meeting jumped at the chance to share their stories, including Francis Nicholson, a court employee who stepped up to the mic. Nicholson has had to work during the shutdown with no pay.
It feels like slavery. It really does, to wake up with no paycheck, working 80 hours, covering a courtroom.
Reverend Lee says it's important to let these voices be heard because people of color are often silenced or left out.
We want folks to leave with a sense of hope, that even though there may be someone in the White House, we know that God is on the throne.
And Lee says he's praying that higher power will help provide the workers much needed relief very soon. For WAMU, I'm Sasha Ann Simons.
Around 800,000 federal workers are off the job or working without pay right now. And despite negotiations between Senate leaders this afternoon, many of those federal workers will likely miss their second paycheck tomorrow. It's been more than a month since the shutdown started. And when people lose paychecks, it ripples out into the communities where those workers live. Our co-host Ari Shapiro is reporting today from the small town of Oakdale, Louisiana, where it seems that everyone knows somebody who's been touched by the shutdown.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, I'm Ari.
All right, James.
How's it going, James?
Hey,
nice to meet you.
Let's start at the center of this crisis and work our way out. James and Tiffany Kirkland have both worked at the Federal Correctional Institution in Oakdale for 5 years.
Matter of fact, we started the same exact day.
They're raising three girls in this one-story house on a corner lot with a trampoline in the backyard. And on this rainy day, there's nowhere to take the kids. No gas money means they can't drive anywhere. No new after-school activities either. Fees are too high. 12-year-old Mandy is in the 7th grade.
We can't do softball. We can barely do basketball.
It's hard to hear the kids say things like that. You know, they don't understand. And their classmates don't understand. And a lot of the teachers don't know that both their parents work for the federal government. So they don't know that they're not getting a paycheck. And all my family's gone. So we have his family here to kind of help out, you know.
James, is it hard to ask for help from relatives?
Yeah, it is. It's very difficult. I mean, it's kind of make you feel like your self-worth is down when you can't support your own self, especially when you used to having two government incomes and you have nothing.
Yeah.
You know.
Tiffany and James are both working more than 40 hours a week at jobs that are paying them nothing right now. Tiffany has spent hours on the phone with creditors, asking to delay car payments, insurance payments. She canceled the cable. She leads us to the kitchen and opens the deep freezer. It's mostly empty.
I know the other day we were in the grocery store, and I want to say it was Natalie asked for something. I kind of just broke down in the grocery store because we've never had not had money for extra food, you know? Now, we might not have the extra money to go bowling, but we've never not had the extra money. I've never deprived my kids of food.
Now that this has been going on for some 5 weeks, how does this week feel different from 2 or 3 weeks ago when this was still just starting?
I think the biggest difference is when you look at your checking account and you see, well, last week I had $2,500 in the checking account, and this week I have $900. And you know that you're spending more money and there's nothing coming back in.
The longer it goes, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the light's dimming. You know, most people can see the light at the end of the tunnel. The light's going away for us. I mean, because it doesn't seem like it's going to get any better.
So that's the view from the bullseye of the crisis here in Oakdale, Louisiana. Now let's follow the circles outward to Canal Coffee, where Roderick James wears a bright pink T-shirt with his nickname, Coffee Man. He's one of Oakdale's small business owners.
With the government shutdown, when it started off just, they thought that it just would affect just the federal workers and everything. Now it's starting to affect all the small business.
There's about 8,000 people that live in Oakdale, and the federal prison employs a few hundred. So explain why those few hundred people not getting paid has a ripple effect through this town of thousands.
Well, I would say them few hundred have ripple effect because they had to go barbershop, get haircuts. They had to come to different kind of restaurants and eat. Oh, that's not got to cease when you're not getting a paycheck. So everybody starts suffering on the back end of this.
The barbershop isn't just a hypothetical example. Roderick James introduces us to Justin Germain Boyd, the best barber in the entire parish, the coffee man says. This barber isn't cutting hair right now. In the middle of the afternoon, he's sitting in Canal Coffee, sipping a drink.
Are you seeing fewer people come and get their hair cut since federal employees stopped getting paid?
Oh, in the last month, most of the guys that come in from the federal prison, it's been real slow for them, you know.
In Oakdale, a typical family makes about $30,000 a year. Compared to that, prison workers got paid well. Boyd says at his barbershop, the guys who worked at the prison always gave the best tips.
What does that mean for your income?
On an average week before the shutdown, I would do at least 20 to 25 heads a day. I literally cleared $300 a day in the barbershop. Since the shutdown, my weekdays, I may get up to like 180.
When the barber, the coffee man, and the federal workers aren't making the money they used to, people don't eat out as much. And Megan Crawford feels that. Her family owns the Burger Inn right in the center of Oakdale.
Burger Inn's an icon. People who've moved away, when they come home, their first stop is Burger Inn.
So when you look at the amount of money that you've made this January compared to other Januaries?
It started to really fall off after that first paycheck was missed. And so it's definitely fallen off tremendously the past week.
We've been talking to people who have been working for the last month without getting paid. So how do you see that here at this restaurant that you own?
It affects us as a business down to our employees. We're cutting hours of our employees, having to cut workers altogether because we are not having the influx.
Tell me about that. How much have you had to cut back?
We're working short shift. So normally we work 7 a shift. We've cut back to 6. Last week, I think we were down $400 on our payroll just from cutting.
Let's go out one more layer. The mayor's office is our outermost circle, encompassing the whole town of Oakdale. And even people here are feeling the pain. The mayor's administrative assistant is married to a prison employee who's working without pay. The mayor's own wife is one of the government workers not getting a salary right now. Mayor Jean Paul sits in an office full of football memorabilia. A clock on the wall interrupts us.
That's my Saints clock.
Is that your Saints cuckoo clock?
Yeah.
Now that we're approaching the end of the month, people's bills are due. At least this is one place the mayor says the city can help.
No, we're going to work with them. We're not cutting no one's water off. I mean, we're just not going to do that. They're going to have services, you know, till this thing gets resolved. Yeah, and that's how we survive. Oakdale survives on sewer and water. I mean, that's our income.
You mean the city's income?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The city's income.
So if people aren't paying their water
and
sewer
bills, they
don't
pay, it affects our operation.
Someday this crisis will be over.
Government employees will get a check for these weeks they've been working without pay. But then the mayor says there's a broader fear.
It's a long-term insecurity, in a sense, you know, because you don't know what's going to happen a year from now. They're going to play with me next year.
Who would make a down payment on a house or open a small business with that kind of insecurity, he asks? How can anyone build a life around this kind of uncertainty?
We're going to take the next couple of minutes to remember a pioneer, Barbara Proctor. She was the first African-American woman to start an advertising agency in the U.S.
Her success in the heavily male and white advertising industry earned her the praise of President Ronald Reagan.
The spirit of enterprise is sparked by the sunrise industries of high tech and by small business people with big ideas. People like Barbara Proctor, who rose from a ghetto to build a multi-million dollar advertising agency in Chicago.
Proctor was born in poverty, but managed to go on to college in Alabama. In 1954, she'd just spent a summer in Michigan and was planning to return to her native North Carolina to teach, but made a fateful stop in Chicago.
I lost my money to go back to North Carolina. As a matter of fact, I didn't lose it. I went shopping and I spent it. And I lost my bus fare to go back to North Carolina. And in a sense, I've been 30 years trying to get my bus fare back home.
Chicago became her home, but before that career in advertising, Proctor got work with a small record label called VJ, and it was that job that gave her a small hand in bringing an unknown British rock band to America. Proctor swapped the rights for songs by the group The Four Seasons for those British singers.
I took The Four Seasons to London and made a trade with EMI Records to trade The Four Seasons records for The Beatles.
Proctor's label released The Beatles, and after a couple of other jobs, she landed a job in advertising. When the agency she was working for proposed an ad borrowing images of social justice marches to sell hair care products, Proctor refused to take part, and she was fired.
It became quite apparent to me that if I did not begin to control my own destiny, I was going to have it changed about every 5 years.
And control her own destiny, she sure did. Proctor went on to found Proctor & Gardner, for years a highly successful agency with major accounts including Kraft Foods, Alberto Culver, and Illinois Bell. Proctor died last month at the age of 86. We learned of her death this week.
Police showing out for the white cop.
North Carolina.
New tonight, a fired Charlotte police officer taking the department to federal court claiming racial discrimination. Michael Tensley, who was black, says he was fired after a dispute with another officer who was white.
Today he spoke about his case, saying he was unfairly punished because of the color of his skin. NBC Charlotte's Richard Vane is at police headquarters with the story. Richard.
Yeah, Tensley tells us basically he is taking CMPD to court, the federal court, this document says. He says because they took the side over a woman officer who he once dated.
Took a stance that white was right and punished me.
Michael Tensley standing in front of the place he said was once part of his biggest joy, the Charlotte Police Department, where he served 16-some years. He was terminated 6 years ago, he says, because of his race and the race of the person he once dated, also an officer. Tensley has filed a suit in federal court against the department, saying it discriminated against him when he ended his two-year relationship with the officer, Amy Aquino.
She was stalking me, and I filed a complaint about the stalking to my supervisor.
That's when he said she claimed he raped her. As part of the department's internal investigation, Tensley and Aquino turned over their cell phones. But records showed that Aquino was actually on the phone with another man during the exact time she says Tensley raped her. The department's investigation said it didn't find any evidence of a rape. He sued Aquino for slander, and he was awarded $41,000. But then the department suspended him and then moved to have him terminated, citing improper use of CMPD equipment.
Once they had my text messages and they saw that what was the allegation wasn't true against me, they went through the rest of my text messages to pull information out.
A police review board ruled 3-2 for Tensley's termination. He said that was just retaliation. The department also paid for Aquino's legal costs, including the settlement. Tinsley says that penalties should be more severe for anyone who makes up false information to police, especially other officers.
Well, I would like to see it to become a felony to file a false police report, because so many people are incarcerated on false allegations, and the person that is the accuser has no repercussions.
Yeah, those two infractions that he made on company property, or with company equipment, I should say. Basically, he told one man looking up in his company equipment, his computer, that he had an expired license and what he needed to do to get it. Another person wanted to buy a rifle, and he told him that that rifle, he should wait for some 30 days. And that was the causes that the department used to terminate him. Again, he'll be in federal court on Monday, February 11th. We're in Charlotte. Richard Devane, NBC Charlotte.
Richard, thank you.
The man that race, class, genre, and the dilemmas of black manhood, not in the top 10, have to see how frequently it gets referenced. Mr. Michael Tinsley, former officer down in North Carolina, you should get a copy of The Man Not and a copy of Mr. Fuller's code book. Understand why you want to avoid sexual intercourse with whites, especially on the job, especially if it's an armed white woman. Jesus. Woo. Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, January 25, 2019. So I have been told. This is our weekly broadcast form, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. If you have, well, I guess, as we normally do, if we have non-white people victims of racism anywhere in the known universe, you don't have any of the problems that Mr. Tinsley and the other black people are talking about. The shutdown didn't have any impact on your nickels. You get all of your promotions, raises on time. If you need a day off, everything is fine. If you have an emergency, no problem. They don't move your chair every other day on the job. They don't poison or sabotage your lunch if you use the community refrigerator, which I strongly advise against. You don't have any of those problems. You should be caller number one, the number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. We always welcome commentary, suggestions from people who have figured out some things that work well to minimize problems with whites, non-whites on the job. Certainly, if you are having problems and would like counter-racist suggestions about how to think about and minimize some of those difficulties without creating new problems, number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. As always, you can email if you are not able or not willing to dial in. You can email untiljustice@gmail.com. And we can read your commentary on the air if you're listening live and you have suggestions or thoughts on what's being discussed, or if you have your own situation and you would like us to kind of share some counter-racist perspectives, you can email and we can read your commentary anonymously on the broadcast. A few things to share before we get started. On a completely unrelated note, information for the Cows 2010. Excuse me, the Cows 10-year anniversary yoga retreat was mailed. If you did not get the email, if you would like information about the Cows yoga retreat, untiljustice@gmail.com, I will happily send you the information. If you got the info, if you have questions, if something is not clear, any additional info needed, let me know and I will get it back to you as quickly as possible. Back to the subject at hand. Number one, these segments, I guess they said the so-called shutdown is supposed to be paused. The language that they've used, it sounds as though this might happen again sometime soon. So we'll have to see. But with the so-called shutdown, the first segment they were talking to, I always find it significant when a white media outlet, they're talking about a serious segment, it deals with racism, and they bring in a black religious figure. There'll be a minister or something of that nature. I always find that to be significant, generally. Religion of white supremacy. But in that segment, the victim was quoted as saying, "There's a man in the White House. God is on the throne." Religion of white supremacy. He said what he said, though. In the segment, or I guess even just quickly with the shutdown, I did think that was important because they had a lot of those types of reports. You heard from Oakdale, Louisiana. They had a different segment, Washington, D.C. We had another segment that was in the Prince George County in Maryland. Lots more of those segments as it went on. I didn't hear as many of those reports back about a month ago. But 30 days in, now it's starting to be a lot more of those reports. Black people talking about, wow, this has been absolutely terrible and having a really destructive impact. I've seen lots of reports with white people whimpering and crying. But as this went on, progressively more and more black people I saw in different news reports talking about how this was having an impact on them. And even indirectly, black people that are not federal employees, where this was having an adverse impact on them because other people who were federal employees couldn't spend. Reminds me what Mr. Fuller says, where do black people get their money? Even the black people who do have a lot of money, where do they get it from? Racist man, racist woman, racist child, even sometimes they can take it back. Next. They were talking about the late Barbara Gardner Proctor, Chicago area, Dr. Welsing, and all of the phenomenal work that she did in advertising. Two major points with that report. They said that she did this starting her own business in an advertising business that was male and white. Why not just say that was dominated by white males? It's not like you had tons of Negro males. It's not like you had tons of Negro males running around. Why not just, you know, call it what it is, dominated by white men? Say what it is. Certainly white people. And you could even be more explicit, dominated by a system of racism, white supremacy. Now, the other point, I thought it was really important. They played the audio segment of former president, suspected race soldier, Ronald Reagan, another said white man. He was supposed to be honoring, and I've talked about this so many times with my own yoga practice, repeatedly, where a black person, they're supposed to be honored. Praise. The president of the United States has exited the White House. What did he say? There's a man on the throne, generally white. There's a man in the White House, but God is on the throne. Mr. Reagan has left the White House and the throne to come and hang out and praise Miss Proctor for her great efforts in business. He says, "You were born in the ghetto and made it out." I feel like we've had people who've called in, whites love those types of stories. They'll bring on a Viola Davis or an Oprah Winfrey or a Tyler Perry. Tell us about how you were a poor, lowly Negro and you grew up with one sock and you had to fight your brother and a cockroach for a half a slice of cornbread. Tell us all about it. Oh, that's great. That Negro trauma, it's right with the hate you give. It's right close. But to identify, this is supposed to be her moment of praise. It's, she came from the ghetto. And look at the Negro now. And again, reminded me of Mr. Fuller. You are the ghetto. Next. I thought it was so important. Black self-respect. Maybe it would have been great to ask Dr. Welsing if she knew about Barbara Gardner Proctor, the late. Or maybe they even, you know, had some time together in Chicago. But Miss Proctor, she was in advertising before she started her own business. And she said that they were, or they reported that they were going to begin using, ostensibly racist, they were going to begin using images from marches, black people protesting racism, white supremacy, ostensibly. They were going to start using those images to sell hair care products. Now, that sounds like about 50 years ago, way before Nike said, hey, maybe we can get these folks to kneel in a pair of Air Force Ones. Racists have a long track record, and a lot of times they just keep doing the same thing over and over and over. But I did appreciate the black self-respect of saying, no, I'm not going to do this. And they said they fired her. Michael Tinsley, anytime when it's a workplace situation, avoid the term fair. I say that for racism, white supremacy in general. But in the workplace, we're never talking about I'm being treated unfairly or I just want to be treated fair. It's correct treatment. You want just treatment, things done in a correct manner. That's the type of language that you have been mistreated, not treated unfairly. Subjected to subversive conduct. That's the type of language that we want to employ, not fair. The Tinsley situation, again, I've said before, I think it would be best in the workplace to avoid any sort of sexual arrangements with white and or non-white people. Even if you work in a job where it's all non-white people, I've been in those environments, and even there, sexual intercourse with people that are working together can just cause a lot of conflicts. I have seen where it can cause a lot of conflicts, and that just becomes exponentially worse if it's someone classified as white, like was the situation, Mr. Tinsley. This is the black male former enforcement official in North Carolina in Charlotte, Mecklenburg County, everywhere. At least many listeners, that should be a familiar plantation. We could pause the power of the white woman on the plantation. As soon as I heard that, that is the area where Jonathan Farrell was shot and killed. Again, the man not referenced in Dr. Curry's book. He talked about that case specifically, and white women doing a job on black males. Again, but the sexual intercourse thing in the job, that is horrendous. Even in that situation, being accused of rape and then having to go through all of that. And I mean, that investigation can take a lot of time. It is totally humiliating. I have observed black males where they have been accused of misconduct on the job. And even if you are found innocent, that sort of thing can take weeks. You never want to put yourself in a situation or end up being abused and found yourself in a situation where you've got a whole building that is looking at you as a suspected rapist or molester or whatever. It is the worst. I would strongly encourage no sexual activity with individuals that are on the job. And really, I wouldn't even what they call flirt on the job. I think some people have said that's a part of their code. They don't do any sort of personal comments, no personal compliments. Oh, no, that's a nice blouse, or that's a nice sweater, or you got a new hair. Nothing. If it's going to be a compliment, it's going to be, oh, that was an excellent report, Miss Johnson. Fantastic. Mrs. Smith, fantastic job this morning. Excellent. That's the sort of thing. Nothing about what you have on, the jewelry, the hair, nothing to avoid. And that's for males and females to avoid these sorts of charges, accusations. With that, if folks have, I think we might have mentioned that before, but I do think that one's important in terms of making sure that there is a code about no sexual activity on the job, even with non-white people. Folks have a thought on that, feel free. We did have people who emailed in before the program. I'll share as we proceed. First person, I was listening to the workplace racism program last night. I heard a caller say the term needling, I think that was B in Toronto, who's with us, and she later on defined it. I never heard the term before, or maybe I have never, or maybe I have and never gave it any attention, VGQ. However, I read this report and saw the word needling, and it was in regard to the relationship between Antonio Bryant, Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger. I just found the word, including in this report, to be interesting. So we'll read a little bit of the report and see where the word needling pops up. Now, this is sports, but this might qualify as workplace racism. If it is not, I will apologize and make amends. And I guess we can evaluate. Does this sound like something that any of you all have experienced on the job? We'll see. I'll read a little bit. So this is Ben Roethlisberger criticized Antonio Brown in meetings, wanted him off the practice field. A former NFL player turned NFL Network analyst has provided a different side of the ongoing saga of Antonio Brown, this is a black male's, relationship with the Steelers and quarterback Ben Roethlisberger, white male suspected racist and suspected rapist. James Jones, a former NFL wide receiver who's now on NFL Network, said on the air that he has heard from multiple people on the Steelers that Roethlisberger's needling of Brown has caused damage to their relationship, and it reached a boiling point last week. I've talked to a couple of people in the Pittsburgh Steelers organization, and they told me this has been lingering on, Jones said. I've been told in meetings Roethlisberger, white male, would take shots at the black male, like, I don't got to throw you the ball and things like that. Wednesday in practice, I heard he ran the wrong route. The white male threw the ball on the ground, said, get him out of here. Get somebody else in there. And that's when the black male was at his boiling point, and that's when he went off. Needling. How about that? Now, does this sound like anything? I know it's in the context of football, but does this sound like anything you all have experienced in a workplace context? White people trying to publicly embarrass you in front of your colleagues, calling you out to accuse you of making some sort of major error, whether you did or not, and saying that you need to be, you know, terminated. Does it sound like something you all have experienced in a workplace context from white people? We'll see if that one qualifies. Last report I'll read before, and this is from a listener, before we get to the callers. Back to Toronto, no less. So this person, non-white female, she wrote in, she said, I always feel bad for Africans who cross the Atlantic. They're often very naive of the insidious flavor of racism in North America. Many non-white people who are born in North America do not understand what racism is and how it works. So the report that she shared from CBC, a former Nunavut nurse vows to go to court to protect his career. A former Nunavut nurse who's fighting to save his career says he will take that battle to the Nunavut Court of Justice if necessary. Willie Tukchulian Magacha was the subject of a week-long hearing into allegations he lacks the competence to work in the territory's remote communities. Wow, this might be answering the question with the next report. The rare hearing held last week in Yellowknife was overseen by a board of inquiry appointed by the Registered Nurses Association of the Northwest Territories and Nunavut. I am very, very determined to go everywhere to make the truth triumph, said Nagacha. If they approve the complaint, I will have no choice but to go forward with that in front of the Supreme Court of Nunavut. After being hired by the Nunavut Health Department in late 2016, Nagacha was posted to the Whale Cove Health Center on December 22nd. At the hearing, nurses who worked with him there testified that he lacked basic nursing skills, such as being able to insert an intravenous or do a neurological assessment. Ngacha maintains the complaints against him are the result of a conspiracy. He said the nurses who complained about his competence, who were employed by an agency that supplies nurses to the Nunavut government, wanted him gone because having a Government of Nunavut employee at the health center meant there was one less spot for the agency to fill. During the hearing, Nagacha put the theory to one of the nurses he worked with. If I say to you, your action against me was to protect the agency's contract, what would you say to that? He asked. I'd say it's false, noting that she took only one other contract in Nunavut after her stint at Whale Cove. I thought they went on to point out some specific racial aspects of this, but this is clearly a black male. They don't go into any more details that are detailing the racism specifically, but for me, I suspect he's probably working with a lot of other white women. That would be my guess. I could be in error. I've never been to this area of Canada, but a black male working with probably mostly whites, maybe even all whites, and a disproportionate number of white women. And somehow the allegation is that his competence, he's not competent to do his job and lacks basic skills. I think I've heard that before a few times. Anywho, the number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If you have comments on what has been shared thus far, or if you have your own situation that you would like to discuss, line should be open. Feel free to chime in.
Hello, Gus.
Aforementioned, be in Toronto.
Yes, hi. I first wanted to say thank you so much for making this possible. I'm still having trouble trying to call into the program, so I really wanted to send my many thanks to you for making it possible so that I can be able to participate through the workaround. So thank you.
Oh, for sure. Glad to have you with us.
Yes. Now, going to the report for Nunavut, so just to give some additional information to listeners, callers, and yourself, Canada has had a real push towards recognizing Aboriginal residential schools and the abuse that had taken place. They're in the process of reconciliation and reparations for that, and I believe that some of the Indian as an Aboriginal, not from India, have received reparations to some degree. And there's also some additional funding that's being pushed there. However, the main contact has been through white people, and there's been very little, very minimal contact with other non-white people. So for the gentleman who is working in Nunavut and who is experiencing the needling, so to speak, it is to be expected. Even myself, when I'm working with diverse populations, and if I go particularly north of Toronto, towards Timmins and such, where there are some pockets of Aboriginal communities, the population becomes more white the further north outside the city. So again, it gets pretty uncomfortable. Especially through the lonely roads where, you know, you just kind of hope that your car doesn't break down because, you know, the amount of discrimination that is still present there is remarkable. So I can only imagine what the gentleman is going through, especially if he's dealing with an all-white workforce. And in particular, all white women who can be particularly horrendous and very creative with their white terrorism. So that's just to give a little bit of added information pertaining to that. I understand that there's also the book club that is happening for The Diary of a Slave Girl, I believe. I hope that I have the title correct.
Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl?
Yes. Thank you so much, Gus. I was just listening to the archive of it, and there's a lot of, the more that we read about these incidents, the more I begin to realize that it's pretty much the same thing happening continuously. So for the black gentleman who is going through the needling process, for him to speak up, you know, he's going to be vilified, and there will be vexatious actions towards him on the part of the white workers or the white nurses that are there. Even in situations, different situations in different workplace occupations that I've held throughout my life, it's a similar type of situation as well. You know, as soon as one speaks out and says, hey, there's some injustice that's going on in here, it's the whites that are usually, you know, terrorizing that person even more, because they've had the audacity to speak out. It's as if non-white people are not to have a voice, are not even to feel, and are just mere things to be treated in such a horrible manner. And this brought me back to when I first worked. When I first started working, I was 12 years old. And it was at the same workplace that my sister was at. It was in a West Indian store that was owned by an Italian family. It was three brothers that owned it. And they had quite a bit of white workers there. But they would have the black female workers at the cash register, I guess to show at the front that there's black workers there when it's really white people that were running the show behind the scenes. And the thing that I recalled most from there are the white males and their sexual harassment towards black females, and including myself as a black child at the time, of only being 12. I remember one time, and mind you, I was getting paid under the table about $20 an hour, so I was only working 4 hours a shift. But at that time, I remember I was walking up the stairs to go and collect my funds for the payday, and I was about to go back downstairs to meet with my sister to go home. And there was a male who, he always smoked cigarettes and he really stunk. But I remember as I was climbing up the stairs to head towards the office, he stopped me and actually kissed me on the lips. And I didn't know what to do at that time. And because I felt so shamed about it, I didn't say anything. So with that, I wanted to advise parents, if you have a child who is underage and they're ambitious and they want to start, you know, working at a little family business or whatnot, to really pay close attention to that situation, and just, you know, inquire with them and definitely have opened the lines of communication with them. I would also say similar to being in the schools as well, because I remember even before starting the job at age 12, and mind you, it was a small part-time job. At 10 years old, when I was at a Catholic school, I remembered that my sanctuary was actually being in the classrooms, because there used to be a phys ed teacher who would literally stalk me in the hallways. And at the times when there were no one in the hallways, he would hold my wrist and hold me up against the locker. And then would start asking me questions like, what's wrong? Is everything okay? But at the same time, he was walking, like, not only was he restraining me unnecessarily, he was also walking towards me, closing in on my personal space, and would have me in that situation until, say, a school bell rings or until someone comes down the hallway. So what would happen is if I see the glimpse of him, I would immediately get into class. And I remember my teachers used to say, oh, you know, B is so wonderful and so astute, and she spends extra time in class and, you know, all these wonderful attributes. But they didn't know that the reason that I was taking class was to stay away from this particular teacher. Mind you, this was in a Catholic school as well. And I believe that this is a part of workplace racism as well, because of the fact that children having to go to school, because if they don't, you know, there's truancy laws against that. Being a student is a job in itself. So for parents to also be mindful, and again, to keep lines of communication open and teach their children about sexual harassment very early on, so that at least the children will have a voice to speak to the parents and have confidence that the parents will advocate on their behalf and to call in whatever authorities are needed in order to get these people charged. So that was another aspect. Also, the last thing that I wanted to report was on the situation that I'm currently in with this agency, going back to kneeling, attempting to pry into my personal business or my private activities outside of the agency. So for the past 3 months, they've been hounding me to give them information that they're not entitled to. So in listening to some of the additional archives through Neely Fuller Jr., I was just remembering about keeping it in the inquiry lane. So just asking questions. And I just wanted to report that when I kept asking the questions about, you know, what my rights are, and am I to divulge all information that's outside of the agency, that was really helpful and effective in neutralizing effectively their terroristic ways of trying to demand information that is not of their business. And I was trying to figure out what to call this type of situation where it's done by white women, where it comes off as if it's a concern, but really it's more of a way of trying to dominate the non-white person into telling them their situation. And it's beyond prying. It's like using communication to terrorize. So it's, how do I put it? It's like me asking you about your personal life, you know, where you work, who you're dating, what you're doing. And these are like, these things wouldn't be any business of mine, but I will just keep hassling you over and over for you to tell me these things. And it's as if, you know, no matter how many different ways one tries to say, okay, you know, this is really none of your business, and even using the direct way of none of your business, they still continue. So I was just trying to find a way of, you know, I don't know if I would call it social terrorism. It's definitely beyond prying, and it has a dominating feature to it. So perhaps some of the callers, listeners, or yourself too, Gus, might be able to help with coining that term as to what to call that situation, so that at least there's a name to that problem, so that it can be identified more readily and that people know how to deal with it, which is basically to stay in the inquiry lane and ask questions. Thank you so much, and I'll leave the line.
Thank you for sharing. B in Toronto, global system of racism, white supremacy. There is nowhere to run, unfortunately. And again, emphasize, you know, frequently with workplace racism and with racism, with white supremacy racism in general, often we are not, you know, sharing, talking about things that are just wonderful to discuss, particularly with strangers. But I do think a lot of times just sharing, we find out that this, you know, happens to a lot of people in the system of racism, white supremacy. As I said earlier, whites do a lot of the same things, even generation to generation. They do a lot of the same things. So I definitely appreciate the candor and you talking about the sexual terrorism that you experienced. And absolutely, that's main theme of Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl next Thursday, part three. But that's a main theme in the system of white supremacy, period. And child rape, same thing that I said yesterday, child rape, that is, you know, cornerstone of how this system operates. They brag about it at times with the whole Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings things. The Loving case, that's another one that I point out. He was the white male in that case was 17 and the black female was 11 when they met. That's another one that I point out. They brag about raping black children in particular. But absolutely, that is one I encourage parents, talk to your children about racism and sexual abuse. We talk about that all the time because frequently they go together. So absolutely speak to your children, check in, and have those open lines of communication. As for the job, I feel I've concluded whites, they are interrogating us on a regular basis. I feel like often on the jobs, there'll be some whites that are so refined that they can come and speak to us and get us to lower our guard, as they say, so that it will be, we will give up information a bit more readily in terms of us being mistreated or any information that they want to know. You know, we might volunteer about our family or if we're dating someone or vacations or just anything. We might, you know, just chat it up with them because we trust, you know, Ted has been here and he's nice and, you know, he's a great old fella or whatever the situation is. I think with that, I think we've talked before. Is this knowing the situation? Is this a job that, oh yeah, I'm trying to be here long term. You know, I want all the promotions that I can get, all the raises that I can get. I think we've said before about you have a very, you already have a narrative in terms of what you're willing to share. This is what I'm going to share, and that's that. And asking questions. So it doesn't appear that you're aloof. It doesn't appear that you're being discourteous to anyone. Whatever the question they ask, what did you do this weekend? That's a common one. You and the family go out this weekend? Oh, just, you know, took it easy, watched a little television, napped a little bit, made a few meals in, just had a really easy time. How about you? Now, see, you didn't give up anything explicit, nothing specific. no details, didn't answer, didn't name anybody or, you know, anything like that. And then you pivot out with a question to give them an opportunity to speak. And then the next time it's going to be back to work, because this is not going to be, you know, a 10-hour, 5-hour dialogue about nonsense. But that's common in the system of racism, white supremacy, in terms of white people interrogating and just trying to get information out of you. I think we've said before, if it's politics or something like that, you can just, oh, yeah, I don't talk about politics on the job. And then you just make sure you say that every time. But that's, you know, major aspect of what we're going to be dealing with in the workplace. And it would just, for me, it would just be, oh, this is what I'm willing to share. This is what I'm not willing to share. And then being consistent about that. And as I said, being courteous the whole way through, talking it up, but just being very methodical about what I say in the workplace. If folks have comments, thoughts on that, how, I guess she was talking about labeling it, number one, and then how to respond to that. Whites, you know, coming in and pestering you with those kind of personal questions. Who are you dating right now? What are you doing? Do you own a house? And blah, 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 the whole gamut. If folks have thoughts or suggestions on that, or if you have your own situation that you'd like to address, line should be open. Proceed. Thomas in New York. Yes, sir.
I don't know, man. When that people ask me questions, I generally give them a very morbid answer. You know, like, you're like poorly. You know, how was your weekend? It sucked. You know, I don't even want to talk about it. How was yours? You know, like, that works pretty well for me. I did have a story to share. The French lady, in my opinion, she tried to get me in trouble. In the position I'm in, I do everything to avoid having to deal with my terrorists. So if someone was trying to put me in the line of fire of my terrorists, that's not a good thing. And also, that tends to backfire on people, and I knew it would backfire on her. You know, it's just little stupid things that aren't important to me in the office. When we moved to this new office, we had first aid kits and all different supplies. I mean, they had stuff packed away that you didn't even know they had, you know, and she wanted to keep it. So, you know, we have all two boxes full of these first aid kits, Band-Aids and everything. And they used to be kept a small kit in the kitchen. I asked her where did she want me to place the kits. She said, you know, she didn't care. Come see me. That was her response to that email. And she wanted me to come see her about something that was totally unrelated. That was when we first moved here. And then tissues, you know, nose tissues. When we got an order a couple weeks ago, within 2 days, every time we place an order, you get 24 boxes. People grab 2-3 boxes, you know, take some home with them. I mean, 2 days they were gone. So she said, you know, who's taking all these, you know, she comes yelling, like me and the receptionist who placed the order, like it's our fault, people. So I want you to monitor them, Thomas. I don't want anyone walking away with more than one box of tissue. Now my desk is toward the front of the office. The supply closet is toward the back of the office. So when we get the next order, I put the tissues in the drawer that's allocated to me. So if someone wants a tissue, they come ask me, I give them a box. Not giving them two boxes, doing what I'm supposed to do. So the French lady comes over and she wanted to know why I'm keeping the tissues. And I explained to her why. This is what I'm told to do. She wants me to monitor them. I'm trying to monitor them. So she said, why are you, I need a Band-Aid. And there used to be a kit in there. I said, oh, I have the kits over here. Here, you know, take as many Band-Aids as you want. I'm waiting to, you know, get a response on what she wants me to do with these kids. So either way, she goes and emails my terrorists. But the way she positioned the email when I saw it later, it made it look like I was, you know, holding this stuff hostage, you know. I come back from getting the fruit, and she's coming over to me and looking all serious and compassionate and I take one ear out of my headphones, like, what's up? So she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I think I got you in trouble because I sent this email. So she tells me before I even speak to my terrorist. So, you know, I'm like, all right, you know. So I'm like, you know, I can't believe her. Why would she even put, you know, this wasn't even nothing important. So, you know, I finished doing what I had to do. So I get preemptive. I go in, take some plastic containers. I make two very nice first aid kits, put one in each kitchen. Take the tissues out of the drawer that's allocated to me, put them on the shelf in the supply room. Then I send an email to the receptionist, letting her know that if anyone asks for anything, I made two first aid kits, put one in each kitchen, and I put the tissues back in the supply room. I was trying to monitor them, but the French lady, I said, said that she would like to have them in the supply room again, so I put them in. And I CC'd my supervisor, my terrorist, and I waited, and she comes over to me, and she says, oh, I was just about to, you know, talk to you about that. And, I forgot I told you to monitor them. And, I didn't mean for you to monitor them at your desk and da-da-da-da, you know. And, but, you know, she hates the French lady. She hates her. You know, what's going on with her? So I said, oh, you know, so I took this attempt to get even. I said, oh, you know, I mean, she's killing me. Every time I look or turn around, she's right there. You know, I'm cutting the food. She tries to talk to me. I don't have time for that. You know, this is tax season. We're starting to get busy. I can't be doing all her FedExes for her still. What do you mean you're still doing that for her? So, see, I knew what caused the push. You know, and I said, listen, I got hundreds of them. I keep a list of them. I pull them up. She said, send me that email. Send it to her. You know. So she calls me over, and the French lady's standing there. And as I'm approaching her, she says, I want Thomas to hear this. You have 1 foot in the door and 1 foot out the door right now. Goodbye. And then she comes over to me and told me to do something for her. So it turns out she got in trouble for that, not me. Guy who used to be across the street, the guy who's looking at the women in the hotel, this guy, I mean, you ever meet someone who's just a total, I guess you could just say an idiot, you know, like it's like a dark cloud, or I shouldn't say that metaphor, but it's following him, man. He breaks the glass door. I mean, I come in this morning to work and it's glass all over the floor. Now, you know whose job it is to pick this up. I'm pissed off. And, you know, later on, about an hour later, he comes and says, oh, last night. So he breaks like a $5,000 glass, custom-made glass door. I was responsible for picking that up, you know. And then as soon as the terrorist comes in and sees it, guess who she blames for it? Before she even asked anyone, Thomas, what did you do to this door? Did you push that cart into it? And I'm like, what cart? What are you talking about? I saw you pushing a cart the other day. I said, oh, I was carrying heavy things. I couldn't. Did you do this? Listen, put my hand out. She calmed down. I explained to her what happened. She smiled. She hates this man. Oh, he did it. Ah, we got him. We got him. Wait until, you know, the force comes in. Oh, my God. I can't wait to get the invoice to put this on his desk. You know, like, so I thought that was pretty interesting, you know. I also decided to hear the French lady comes to me later, you know, trying to act like everything's all good, you know. And she wanted to know why was I getting orange juice, because we got a huge order of orange juice. I told her it's tax season, you know, they work on the weekends, you know, they want orange juice. I got to order bagels for them, to, you know, so they get here when they get in on Saturday and Sunday. Like, you know, I said, it's tax season. You haven't been asked to work on, I don't work on weekends. I said, oh, you will be. She said, I won't be. I said, okay. She said, you know, we don't usually leave until 8, 9 o'clock during tax season. I mean, this is the busy season. I leave at 5. I said, oh, okay, no problem. So, you know, I go around to my terrorist, and I said, man, she thinks she's going to be leaving at 5 o'clock, and everyone else got to stay until 8. You know, I just kind of as you would say, threw her under the. She said that, leading to she's out of here. I'm telling you, I don't think she's gonna survive this tattoo. So I hated to, you know, but I hate to have to deal with this lady. So I do everything not to have to deal with her. When someone puts me in the line of fire, this lady, it irks me, Dutch. You know what I'm saying? And I did hear some white people today at work talking about Kamala Harris, yeah. And very interesting commentaries on her that they were making. I was just sitting back and observing. And of course, they didn't ask me anything, but I think they were trying to have the conversation so that I could hear their point of views, you know. But I had my headphones and I didn't have the music on, but I was just ear hustling. And I'll meet my line. Thank you, Gus.
Four more years. Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, anybody else, they want to run both of the Clintons this time. How about that? Four more years. That said, excellent. I think that's 2 weeks in a row with the outstanding work with the emails to have that outstanding 21st century electronic verification. Like, oh yeah, I am a FedEx running Negra. She just has me sweating. I'm surprised I didn't have a package right now. And whammo. Oh yeah, I keep a listing of all that. Excellent. Excellent. That is counter-racist brilliance right there. Documentation is so important. That's exactly what I have in the description. That can serve as evidence. What did the warden, the terrorist, what did she say? Send me a copy of that email. And then she goes over to fuss at the white woman. Love it. Love it. Thank you for catching the metaphor. Much obliged. We're all trying to get better. Still learning. When the mail, I guess, broke the door or what have you, that probably cost $8,000 or what have you. They have all these expensive trinkets all over the building, the pictures last week. And the white woman immediately, that's the man, not again. She immediately comes. It's not even a question of what happened. Are you okay even? My goodness, did you get cut? Is everything, did anybody else get? That's not even the inquiry. Is this Negro has broken the door. What the hell? What did you do? I knew you did it. I told him not to hire the Negro. That right there, the number of times that Thomas has called in and talked about headaches and not feeling well and high blood pressure. Can you even imagine? I'm down here. I don't even make $5,000 and they send me down here to clean up after this, you know, other individual broke the door, send me to clean it up. And then she doesn't even ask, Negro, you broke the door. Wait a minute. I'm just trying to, And then she finds out, she cackles about it. Yes, I just saw the term today, Schadenfreude. We talked about that 10 years of the cows. We talked about that term explicitly. Enjoying when other people fail and have problems. Yes, I don't like him either. I'm so happy the Negro didn't do it, but yes, I can't stand him. I can't wait till we get the invoice. And then you get to go off with him. That is white people. I just don't think we understand. That's the sort of mentality. Look forward to mistreated, but get excited. It seemed like she got energized. Oh, Thomas broke the door. You what? I'm going to be on that Negro all day long. If he's like, she would have been happy. Something to gripe about for the day. The tissues, since that involved her too, I think that's also important. Even the metaphor of it, that I'm going to have, this will be our cotton picking Negro for the day. We'll put Thomas in charge of dispensing the cotton in the office, since we've got cotton hoarders. So we'll put him in charge. Then if they get mad, who is this Negro ruling over the cotton? Get as much as I want. Take 50 boxes of tissues home if I feel like it. Then they get mad at him. Set this sort of thing up all the time in the workplace. I'm supposed to be the one. You can have as many of the Band-Aids as you want. It's cotton too. Have as many of those as you want, but the tissues, I'll be rationing those out. And I think we talked about that with 40 hours and an unwritten rule. That was 2014. That was a broadcast that was all about workplace racism. And I pointed out with the author, who was a non-white female, she had a comment that it made some sort of joke to imply that black people steal everything at work. And I said then that I did not think that was correct. I said, I think no one is a larger theft in the workplace than whites. Black people, maybe you could get an extra box of tissues. It doesn't sound like Thomas would be able to even get that. Whites, I said Enron. That was what I listed at the time. I wasn't even thinking, you know, pilfering tissue boxes. But I mean, yeah, you got that too. Who is that? That's not black people at the workplace stealing tissue. Come on. Other folks who dialed in, if you either have comments on what has been shared thus far or if you have your own situation, the number 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. And I absolutely think that whites in the workplace and in many other environments, they will say things just because they want you to hear this. It could be a total lie, whatever. They just want you to hear this and maybe even to see how you respond to this. I could totally see that with some whites saying, oh yeah, that, you know, Miss Harris, I'm, you know, going to vote for her. Yeah, we got to get him out of here. The shutdown. I hate that Trump. I could totally see them just saying that around the neighborhood. Get him this time. 4 more years. They got their 4 more years button in the car. Other folks, if you have commentary, lines should be open.
First, can I just make one more comment? So another incident that happened, it didn't even hit me until you mentioned the pictures. This week, on Monday, we got these very extravagant signs that hold everyone's name, you know, including me. I get one to put on the desk they allocated to me that says Thomas Smith, very nice, and silver plated, you know, frame. You know, they paid thousands for this, you know, this stuff. So I find out it's my job to hang these things up, you know. I'm not, you know, so I go around and I put them up. I try to use certain points of reference to keep them on an even keel. And the partner that calls me Shaq, this little guy. Now, the partners had a partner retreat. So they were out Monday and Tuesday, but they still came to work in their street clothes. And, you know, it's nothing funnier than seeing white people seeing a suit every day in their street clothes, trying to put on jeans and stuff. But he comes in and he asks me for my, you know, the thing that you roll out with the measuring on it. I forget the name of it, but, you know, you roll it out. It's yellow, you know, the tape, the measuring tape. So he asked me for it, and he goes over and measures his nameplate. And then he walks to the next partner's door and measures his nameplate. He says, hey, Shaq, you're about a quarter inch off, buddy. I said, oh, man. So I already know that this guy, he's so anal that this was going to be something that I needed to fix. So, you know, the whole night, you know, I'm thinking, man, I got to get in tomorrow and measure all those signs, take all those signs off the door, you know, and already if they stick with this adhesive glue on the back. So it's not easy to pull them back off, you know, once you put it there. But I got in first thing in the morning and I did it. I measured them all to, you know, 66 inches from the floor, put it there on each door, made sure they were in the right place all around the office. And my terrorist came back because she also, being as she's the executive secretary to the owner, she also was at the partner retreat. She came and she looked at them and she kind of, and he said, hey, you know, Shaq had them a quarter inch off, you know, hey, Shaq, let me get the tape. And he saw it, he measured it. Oh, they're perfect. Oh, okay, good job. You must have fixed it. So she's like, great job, Thomas. And she walked off. But, you know, like, this guy, you make $5 million. This is what you worry about. I'll mute my line, Gus. Thank you, man.
The grandcestor, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, it immediately, as soon as the tape measure was mentioned, it reminded me everything gets to the genital level. That's exactly what that sort of thing sounds like. Whose is bigger? Whose is low? Oh, you're a little bit off here. I'm going to go measure mine and then go measure this one over here. You're a little off, buddy. Like, that's what it sounds like to me. I could be totally in error, folks can let me know if, you know, I'm just, my mind is in the gutter and I am misapplying or misrepresenting the brilliance of Dr. Francis Cress-Welsing. Let's see. Other folks, if you dialed in, if you have commentary to share, *61. If you have thoughts on what's been shared thus far, or if you have your own situation, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am. Greetings, Draptomania.
Greetings. Greetings, Gus and callers. I just had to say, Gus, you have had me crying, laughing. You and Thomas with your stories is just, I just was over here crying over here. About the terrorists, Thomas terrorists again. And when you were talking about, Gus, about the story about how they like to hear hard trial stories about us coming from the ghetto and things like that, I was laughing about how you said fighting a cockroach or something like that. Different stories they like to hear about us, about hard times and things like that. I was laughing because I can identify, because I've had rough upcomings. But, you and Thomas really had me over here really crying. I mean, like, gut laughing. I'm like, I can barely breathe over here. But I wanted to share something that happened to me today on this new job that I have. It's like I said, it's with some non-white individuals and victims. And thanks to the show and your suggestions from listening to the show, how you always talk about reading the policies and procedures. So being that I just started the job last week, I had an opportunity. What I ended up doing was this week, and I made it my business to read the policies and procedures. So I read through the policy and procedures, so I know what to expect and what's, you know, appropriate and what's not, you know, as far as behaviors and different things like that on the job. So the type of job that I'm doing at the moment is in doing some food services. So yesterday, the lead, or I guess the acting supervisor at the time, she was going to throw away some food. So as I recall, by reading the policy and procedures, it said that you're not supposed to bring anything home or what have you, because, you know, you're not supposed to take anything from the kitchen home or anything like that. So yesterday, at the end of the day, she was about to throw some stuff out. She said, "Oh yeah, I'm about to throw some stuff out," and I suspect that this was being done on purpose to try to entrapment, or I believe that it was done on purpose, because there's no way that she did not know that this was not a policy. So she said that she was going to throw these items away, and did anybody want any? So I was like, well, yeah, I mean, I'll take, you know, such and such and such and such. And then the other girls was like, well, you know, do y'all have some? Never mind, I don't want any, whatever. And I think it was just to see if I was going to take some, because if I would have ended up taking it, what would have happened was I could have been fired for stealing. So what I ended up doing, I said, no, I thought about it. I said, no. After she said, I said, yeah, well, I'll take this and that and the other. Then I said, no, never mind. I don't want to carry anything home. I said, I won't be bothered. So what I did today was when I was, working my line, I asked another employee, I said, let me ask you a question. I said, can we take such and such home at the end of the day? If anything is left over, they're going to throw it out. Could we take it home? She said, no. So what I did, I asked the supervisor, and I asked her, I said, let me ask you, just out of curiosity, if this and that is left over, are we able to take it home at the end of the shift? She explained to me what I just said. She said, no, you can't take it home because, you know, even though it's, it's left over, whatever, you know, it can be perceived as stealing. I said, oh, okay, thank you. I just wanted to know. You know, I just asked the question just to see, because it's good for me to at least know what I'm dealing with. Because when the girl came out to the supervisor, she said something to her, whatever. But like I said, I just got that. I am of the opinion that was done on purpose. There's no way that you can have that type of position and not know that that's not something that you're supposed to do. I think it was just done as a test, try to set me up to see if I was going to go fall for the bait, and I didn't. I didn't fall for the bait, and I'm glad that I stayed in the question lane. I'm glad I listened to my gut instincts, and I'm glad that also that the policy and procedure did kick back in. I'm glad that I also read the policy and procedures, because there has been many a times that I've worked at jobs and I have not even considered reading that policy and procedure. And it's and I would really like to say that it's because of your program that I have taken that policy and procedure seriously, because I hear you reiterate time and time again how important that is. And I see the importance of that now. And from now on any job I ever have, I will be referring back. It's like it just became a part of my it's like it became like a second nature thing that whenever they said something, I was like, well, no, the policy and procedure didn't say that. So now I kind of just, it's like a default for me now. And I just would like to thank you for making me aware of that. This, your program for making me aware of how important that was. Because like I said before, prior to listening to your program, I did not, I really just, looked at the policies and procedures with a minimum of concern. I really didn't take it as serious as I have been taking it since I've been listening to your program. And that's all I had to share. And thanks a lot.
Much obliged. Glad it has, or at least some of the information has been useful. Definitely policy and procedure. That can be so helpful. And that is entrapment. And that is very, very common. We've had so many examples of that down through the years. Even before we had a workplace racism, separate broadcast. But being on jobs where whites will suggest that you do something or offer you something that is totally in violation of policy and procedure. And then when you do it, you can't turn around and say, well, wait a minute, Susan said that, I could have it. She came around at that on page 55 of your employee handbook, which you signed to get this job. It says no taking home, stealing, thief. That's what they'll say for the write up. It won't be, well, Helen, you can't take anything home. You're supposed to have read this. Did you not read the handbook? You know the niggers don't read. Well, you should have read it, and that's going to be, sometimes they fire you, right? That's what they do. Sometimes they say you're a thief. That could be grounds for termination. And I've seen that with a lot of them. I mean, it can be way bigger than just, something that we're going to throw away anyway. We've had victims who said sometimes it's been a white person will come and say, well, hey, you can give this vendor $10,000 in advance, even though they haven't provided the services yet. Let's just go ahead and do it because this is a cool white fella and we like him. And they said, whoa, let me check policy and procedure. And in fact, let me double check with a more powerful white person to see is this in accordance with our policy? And they laughed and said, of course not. Same thing. Wouldn't have been that white woman said, go ahead and do this. It would have been, you know, this is not what we are supposed to do. You are in trouble. Same type of thing. So absolutely know that policy and procedure for yourself, and absolutely be mindful that whites can and do often suggest those type of things. I think Mr. Fuller had a segment. He was talking about the plantation incidents in the life of a slave girl, where he said that they would do things to try to coerce the slave into stealing some, like they would starve. That's incidents in the life of a slave girl. They would keep them hungry. And then we know they're going to steal a piece of cornbread. And then as soon as they thought, up, you're a thief, and now we get to go out and lash you, you know, 5,000 times or whatever it is. We had about 50 of those incidents in the story yesterday. They do the same types of things now. So just be very mindful of that. Know that policy and procedure, and be really, and particularly if it's a white person that is suggesting, oh, yeah, go ahead and do something that's in violation of policy. It's all right. It's cool. Yeah, it'll be fine. Be especially leery of them.
But you know what, Gus? I'm sorry. It wasn't even, you know, it was a non-white person that did that. You know, but you know, they get them to do the bidding, you know, and we all know that the victims do their bidding, and they're victims too. It is what it is. Yeah, I don't know, you know, how to say it without using a metaphor. But the good thing about it is that as opposed to getting upset or taking it out on the victim, even though, you know, then how we do to each other because of the system. I still stayed there and helped her out and didn't react and didn't get mad or anything. And that's real different for me because I have been just learning how to not, like I said, just respond as opposed to react. After I gathered all my information, got everything I knew, and knew that that's what she did, I still did not change the way that I act, reacted or, you know, acted with this victim of white supremacy. It's unfortunately that we do things like that. I mean, but it's to be expected. Like you always say, we have to expect that we are going to act like that towards one another in the system. And that's all I have. And I did get an opportunity to listen to the book reading yesterday, and as exactly what you just said, when you was reading it, when they were reading the story, I do remember parts of the story, how they did. They'll set up the conditions for you to, you know, have to go out and do certain things, and then when you do it, then they'll punish you for it. And it's just basically, that's really what it's just, they really wanted you to do that anyway, just so they can have a reason to act the way that they wanted to act anyway. You know, that's just their nature. That's all I have. Thank you guys so much.
Context of white supremacy. Much obliged. Thank you for reporting and making sure we understood that it was a victim, a non-white person who suggested that you take these items or what have you that was in violation of policy. I reminded folks, try to remind people of that for the entire time we've been on. When you're on these jobs and the system in general, army of one, we're not going there thinking that you have brothers and sisters, just because the individuals might be classified as non-white. This is still a system of racism, white supremacy, and many non-white people, unfortunately, they are victims. But as you stated, many of them, whites have them compromised, and they are unfortunately doing, as racist man, racist woman, doing what they request, which happens to a lot, if not all of us at some level. So just be mindful of that in the workplace. They can put a lot of pressure on any of us. That is what the system of white supremacy means. Other folks have commentary that they wanted to share.
Gus, I have a food story that goes in line with the caller just talked about.
A food story. I always love a good workplace racism food story.
Yeah, I worked at a law firm. And this is a pretty big law firm. They had their own chef, their own place where employees could go and eat, and the chef also cooked the meals for client meetings, you know, and, you know, plated meals, you know, to impress the client. And the food that they would cook is generally this real lean, real healthy menu for the lawyers, of course, you know. And what happened was they would give us a card when you start the job, and you could swipe that card and buy as much food as you want, and it'll come off your paycheck. But they didn't tell you that it'll come off your paycheck all at one time in like 4 months. You know, some people will stay home whole paycheck eating food, you know, but a couple of people that work there for the food services department, and, you know, you go there every day, you eat lunch, you know, you build a rapport with the people. They were caught taking home leftovers, and they were fired. And the chef, this lady who was not even she was white, but not an American white. I think she was like Russian or Polish, you know, one of those Eastern Europeans. She had like this, she ruled with an iron fist, you could say. She fired them for taking home leftovers from a meeting, not even stuff they cooked in the kitchen. She fired another guy for taking some cookies. You know, it was like real petty. Come to find out, she owned her own restaurant too. That, you know, she was buying the food from the law firm and then sticking it in the freight elevator, and at the end of the night taking that to her restaurant and using that food to cook her own restaurant. She got caught doing it. You know, police were involved in everything. But, you know, white people are the best thieves.
No one does it better. Use of words and theft. They steal people. They steal. They don't just take a few pieces of cornbread or some extra produce. They steal people by like the boatload and brag about it. Make movies about it. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, commentary on what's been shared thus far, or if you have your own situation, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter, greetings, sir.
Greetings, Gus, and greetings all of the other callers. Just like to first comment on, I think you earlier in the broadcast, you brought up a question on whether or not the incident with Antonio Brown and the quarterback is that workplace, and I would say yes, it is. They are professional athletes or professional entertainers. You know, the people activity of entertainment is the people activity, and they are employees. They have a work week just like everybody else. It's called football practice in that particular endeavor, sport. Primarily, as everybody knows with the NFL, primarily the games are on Sunday. Sometimes they're on Thursday, sometimes they're on Mondays. But primarily on Sundays, they're normally are off on Mondays, which doesn't mean that they, you know, sit at their house or whatever, but they still show up to the job. They just don't practice outside. They may lift, they may watch film, they may go to rehab from the Sunday's game, that sort of thing. I just can't remember the quarterback's name, but I do know in Antonio Brown because he's from South Florida. I remember he was in high school. He was an opponent a few times with me as a coach. Yes, and also a unique thing about professional football, fighting in the workplace is not unusual, especially during practice, as far as that's concerned. It can get pretty hostile. We can remember about the incident that took place with the non-white black male who was a Stanford graduate with the Miami Dolphins, who had to show up to work every day and be in a hostile environment with this white racist suspect, white male, that basically intimidated him and actually, unfortunately, with assistance with non-white people, was getting terrorized on a daily basis. One of the most hostile places in the National Football League is actually the locker room, where disputes or whatever sometimes could take place. It depends on the organization and how well they are doing. There are some places where those things are not commonplace, and because it's based on success and also some of the players basically manage and have a good constructive control of those areas, such as the locker room. But yes, it is a workplace. Most people are only captivated by either captivated or just have a disdain for the playing of the game and whatnot, but it is a workplace, like it or not. Yes. Was I clear on that?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Yes. You mentioned also about quote unquote dating or whatever within law enforcement. It is quite not a good thing to do. I'll put it that way. Matter of fact, just recently there was a black female enforcement official from Shreveport, Louisiana, who was killed recently. I mean, within probably the last 2 weeks, by her boyfriend, her quote unquote boyfriend, killed as she was heading to go to work. So, and a lot of times when that takes place, they actually would declare that being killed in the line of duty, as that person is getting on their uniform and going towards work, they would classify that as being a death while on duty. A lot of times they would do that, and I think that's what they did with her. So that's an example of the dangerous chance that one would take by having a closer relationship with someone who carries a gun. It can get pretty bad as far as that's concerned. But those are the only things I can think of right now. And thanks everybody for listening.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. Amber Geiger, I was thinking about that situation as well. That was the white female enforcement officer in Texas. She's been charged with killing the black male down in the Texas area. Absolutely. If other folks have comments they would like to share, comments, suggestions, if you have your own situation, or if you would like to speak on any of the different vignettes that we've heard thus far through the broadcast, feel free. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks who dialed in with a hand. Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. Got a few scenarios I'd like to report on. One is every year we have our kind of like a group meeting or team company meeting, and the vice president will kind of go over the business and give even an ethics overview. And so, and doing the ethics overview gets to the part where it talks about discriminating, not discriminating against different races, genders, and so on. And then he just makes a quick joke saying, "Hey, yeah, and don't discriminate against older white men in their 60s, middle-aged white men in their 60s." And of course, he's a white man in his 60s there. So I just wanted to kind of make that as a joke, right? So I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, who really does discriminate against white men in their 60s? I don't know if people or groups or organizations, but maybe there is some. So, but he wanted to put it out there as a joke. Next, there was a couple of people that were retiring, and our HR department called on one of the other persons to kind of give a speech and recognition of the two people that were retiring. One was a white lady, the other one was an Eastern Indian. And so he first mentions the white lady and when she started and her different roles and positions that she served, and just talked about the different responsibilities and all, how pleasant it was to have her working there and how she's going to be greatly missed and all. Then he went to the Indian gentleman and was discussing, you know, his work tenure and all, but started off with him saying, you know, he's originally from India and he's, you know, he came here with a such and such age and then he went to school in Mississippi. And of course, it probably was a little difficult and challenging going to school there in that environment. And then he also moved to another country and then actually resided here and got a job working in computers and so on and so forth. I just found it interesting that for the white lady, he didn't say anything about where she came from, what country she was born in. And, you know, everybody assumed, right, that she was born and raised here. But of course, I'm going to make that distinction. The person I know of him, I don't know of him as being someone who's antagonistic, as being a racist, or, you know, but it's just common culture. So, you know, you kind of sit back and say, yeah, okay, yep, you know what? That's kind of what I expected, you know, coming from white people. Last scenario, I reported a few months back about one of the gentlemen that would stop by and say something specific to me every now and then on the lines of my hair is getting too long, I need to get a haircut or something like that. And the last time that he did that, I really kind of just questioned everything that he said out loud. And then he quickly kind of changed the whole conversation and ended that. And I had never had anything else said to me from him at all about my hair length, never had any other issues. But yesterday, so that same day that we're having this retirement get together in the cafeteria there, so they had all the food out in the hallway, and everybody was kind of like lining up in the hallway to get to the food and then go inside the cafeteria to sit down and eat. And while I was walking down the hallway with my direct report, and so I see him up against the wall, and there's a line there. And as you come around, there's a long line going down the hall, and there's a lady that I needed to talk business with. She's like a foot or 2 feet right in front of him, and so I see he's looking my way, and you know he kind of just says out loud, "Get to the back of the line. You get to the back of the line." And I just totally ignored him and just had that conversation that I needed to have with the young lady there. Can I still be heard? I'm hearing a lot of background noise. Okay.
Okay, yes, so we can hear.
So I totally ignored. Yep, okay. I totally ignored him, completely didn't even look at him at all, and had my conversation with the lady and then went and got in line, but never even gave him any attention at all. And so later on, I saw him kind of walking by in the area where I was sitting, and I can kind of see out of my peripheral vision that he had kind of stopped and looked back in the room where I was sitting. I never even looked back up at him, nothing, just never, because I knew it was him. But he kind of looked, stopped in, and then just kept on going about his business there. But those, you know, those are the scenarios I wanted to share. But again, it was just, you know, that was my code of response there, is just to totally ignore him. So I know he felt so out of place, or know that he said or did something incorrect. Now, you know, he's the kind of person, too, that would really kind of be a smart-aleck type joking guy that always wants to, you know, will joke with other people. So he would say things like that to other people. But knowing that he said things to me in the past that was kind of on the lines of racist comments, then I'm totally taking that, interpreting that entirely different. If he says it towards someone else or if he says it towards me. When he says it towards me, I'm interpreting that totally different. So, but again, I just gave him no eye contact, no response at all. And I know it bothered him, you know, that I didn't respond. But that was it. Just wanted to share those things there.
Much obliged for sharing the non-response. That is A+ brilliance with counter-racism as well. I've said that repeatedly. Sometimes that's the best. Frequently, that's the best response. You don't have to say anything, not a word. And controlling those nonverbals. Emmy talked about that as well, where your body doesn't respond. You can just stay neutral, same tone of breath. And the whole time, exactly as you said, is that nigra? Is that sassy nigra ignoring me? He didn't even... That right there also gets the whites big time. You not responding to them, ignoring them. Wow. They have castrated, you know, a dozen niggers for that sort of thing. What does it mean to be white? I think that's so important when you talked about the difference. This suspected race soldier saying that, get to the back of the line or what have you, that he, you know, jokes around or I guess makes these sort of crass comments to a lot of people. But you all don't have that sort of rapport. I think that's real important previous history. And just, hey, I don't think you talk to him like that in the workplace or probably anyone else. So why would that sort of commentary be directed at me? Going back to the previous incident that you reported on about the, I guess, retirement ceremony. And they talked, I guess they did the white woman first and, you know, all her accolades and bravo and, you know, we'll miss you, riding off into the sunset. And then they get to the non-white person. Now, you know, Gus T might even say that I set this up. I think I just said the same broadcast. Whites love it. In fact, they will take an opportunity when a non-white person is supposed to be praised. And instead of that, it will come some tacky moment for racism. And it will be, oh, tell us about the time in the ghetto. Now, this one, we got the international. So tell us about the ghetto in India. You worked up through all those colored folks, got out of there, all the crime and poverty, came out all the way over here. And it was tough. It was grimy. Woo! But you made it. Bravo. I just said that. And then to get it from an international perspective, they love that sort of thing. And the reason that it has been tough, racism, white supremacy, them and their cousins and their other white friends, they know why it's been tough. It's they're really admiring their work of terrorism. Again, in my view, this is just what does it mean to be white? The reason that I keep saying some of the same things, even within the same broadcast, is not luck. It's not an accident. It's not a coincidence. It's white people practice racism, white supremacy. It's not just their culture is racism, white supremacy, but it is far beyond that. What does it mean to be white? Whether you run around calling everyone nigger or not, what does it mean to be classified as white? Very important question to answer honestly. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Hey Gus, can I just add one quick thing about the guy there that was being sarcastic with people?
Let's hear it.
Yep. So, you know, so my code has changed in my response to him over the years. So the times when I was less informed, I would be sarcastic back to him, you know. But over the last couple years, that's changed. So I don't respond that way anymore. So, you know, I wanted to make that clear that, you know, I used to have that type of relationship where I would joke back with him or be sarcastic with him. But now that I see that, you know, and Lauren has been listening with the cows, I'm seeing and hearing now that the racist things that he says didn't really jump out before, but now it sticks out very, you know, very obvious now. So, but yeah, I just wanted to clear that up.
We are all still learning. Thank you for sharing. I guess if I could ask a quick question, how has your relationship contact with this suspected racist, how has it changed from the time when you would get into these sarcastic exchanges, these little doesn't get any better than tacky, Mr. Fuller, when you would have these little tacky exchanges with him, trading insults basically, to now where you don't do that. He may say whatever he says and you just remain quiet. How has your relationship with him changed?
Yeah, so he talks less to me now because of, you know, the times when I did respond where it kind of put him in a awkward position where he's, you know, being heard and I'm questioning his response to me or his words to me. So he says less to me now. And that's okay. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. That's spectacular. So,
and of course, I don't really, yeah, and of course, I don't say a whole lot more. You know, to him, I'll say hi, greetings. That's about it. Not a whole lot more. You know, if anything else, it'll be more job-related type discussions. But that's pretty much it. Not a whole lot of other discussions. You know, actually, going back years, we used to even have times we would all go play basketball together, and I'd be one or two blacks, and all the rest white. Well, you know, that stopped years ago anyway, but I wouldn't do that anymore anyway.
Outstanding. That brilliant counter-racism right there. Just no need to waste unnecessary commentary. Keep it work-related. Definitely not doing any sort of extracurricular hanging out, but just noticing, when we're tacky and he gets to trade insults, and even if you get the best of him, well, I'll come back and try again tomorrow. I'm just going to have another one. This is what I love to do, insult niggers and make my little slick comments. When you stopped all that, then the I can't have fun anymore. The nigger doesn't even respond. I say whatever. I make my slick. I stayed up all night thinking of something slick to say. And he ignored. Yeah. Oh, well, they move on. I've heard this before. That's been the same response that I've had. That's why I say consistently one of the best responses that you can have, nothing at all. No nonverbal, not even an eyebrow raise. Keep it moving. They will leave you alone because a lot of times they're just doing this to get you upset and foaming at the mouth, have us chimp out, and then our blood pressure, same thing we mentioned before, that's what they want. When they don't get that, move on and find another non-white person. Other folks who have dialed in, if you have commentary to share, lines should be open. Proceed. While folks are getting their commentary together, the number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. We should be here tomorrow. Compensatory call in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll review what has transpired over the past 7 days, including a game, details on the cows. Yoga retreat were emailed. Folks can let me know if they have questions, gripes, problems, concerns, need any additional info. Let me know if you wanted information on the yoga retreat and did not get it untiljustice@gmail.com. And I will happily get that out to you after the conclusion of the broadcast. Thank you kindly. Other folks have commentary that they wanted to share.
I guess.
Yes, sir.
Heard both of you all. Let's nab Stacy in the UK. Almost 3 a.m. officially, 2:55 a.m. Saturday morning in London. Grand to hear from you, Stacy.
Hello to you, Gus. The callers. Gus, can I just check? Did you get an email from me?
Yes, ma'am. I can chat it up Sunday.
Okay, I haven't checked the response. Okay, that's great. I'll try and be quick with my updates. I've been mentioning the non-white female who has secured a job in another team in the organisation where we work. She wanted to go on leave, annual leave, for taking up her new post, but they were refusing to give her a start date. She now has the start date, and that's because the new team basically said she will be starting on X date, and you are now sending her on annual leave. And her new manager, her old manager, she'd been sending them emails and she making sure that everybody was copied in. And they were just completely ignoring it, even though she's technically worked her notice. And she's been very calm. I've advised her and do not take annual leave without authorization. She did tell me that in the past, in another team, she had done that and offered to work on a Saturday. And the person who was managing her at the time pulled her aside and I guess gave her some sort of disciplinary, which disregarded the fact that she was prepared to work on a Saturday, said, no, you won't be doing that. And I've already spoken to HR and deducted your salary, which at that time I didn't know had happened. So I'd never heard of anybody doing that, to be honest with you. But it didn't surprise me. So, so she's had to come into work this week, even though everybody knew she wanted to be off. But the new team have pulled rank and have given her a start date, so she now will be able to move into her new role. And I'm sure technically, you know, contractually, she has met her commitment. If she was changing organisations, they would have had to have released her by now. So it was just done out of pure spite. But anyway, I'll move on. Now she can go to her new job and be fine. Angie Thomas, Gus, just so you know, she has a new book. It's called On the Come Up. I saw it lying around the office, so it did make me chuckle. And should you ever want to have another classic to read on the book club, that's one for you. I'm sure the person reading that book is a suspected rogue soldier. So very interesting. Anyway, and we have from time to time been mentioning entrepreneurship, and I did raise in the past that my ex-manager, who was harassing me for quite some time, had told me that she thought I should go and start my own business. We were not having any conversation around my career aspirations, how she might support me or anything. I was giving her some feedback on some other work, which had gone extremely well. So why she decided to tell me I should go and start my own business technically didn't follow, but I guess it meant get out of my team. Anyway, I was having a conversation with my daughter this week, and she actually reminded me that she had done an internship years ago, and it was for a very large global investment bank, and she had not been supported properly on that internship. And her manager at that time had said to her, oh, perhaps you should think about entrepreneurship. And it was only because we were having a conversation this week when she was speaking with what I'm going to call her mentor, but from now on I will refer to the mentor, taking on board the firefighter's guidance about the meaning behind that word. I'm going to call it her compensatory guidance person. About the way that organisations say that they want people who are entrepreneurial, but really don't. And she was giving him feedback about the fact that she had been terrorised in the organisation where she's at now, but has also managed to secure a role in a new team. However, the way that the entrepreneurship is used in organisations is they want people who, you know, have got creative skills and so, you know, can move really quickly on projects and, you know, be very innovative, etc., etc. But he acknowledged that really people at top of organisations say they want that, which I don't really believe. But that's his feedback to her. But that, you know, people lower down the chain struggle with it. And he was listening to her feedback because he was suggesting that she come and talk to his HR teams and his senior managers. But he technically works for a different organisation, so whether that will happen or not. But but the whole conversation reminded me of the fact that she also had been told a similar thing. So it was just a pattern, which I don't know why I'd forgotten it, to be honest with you. But it'd be interesting to know if other non-white people get told similar things. Now, at the time, her manager was a non-white Asian male, but in a very, I would say, white, I don't know the percentage, but there would be a large degree of race soldiers in that bank, so definitely a culture there anyway. And Gus, I will mute my line and come back if there's time. I'll allow the other person who wanted to speak to add their commentary.
Did you say, Stacey, that it was a co-worker who had on the come up Angie Thomas's new American classic?
Yes, I saw it lying around on the desk, and seeing as though she came to visit my workplace many years ago, or 2 years ago, I think now, I do think there was an overlap with workplace racism, so I thought I'd let you know, Gus. Yes.
Wow. What to say? What to say? We did have the white woman in Norway on the program 2 days ago, 3 days ago, Tuesday, about she also loved The Hate U Give, suspected racist Anne Michelson. But wow, global system of racism. That right there says a lot to me. The fact that I remember that they brought her over to your job for reasons I still can't understand. Unless third time, tell us. Let's bring over the American Negra and she can tell us the story about the Negra who got shot and killed selling drugs. And yeah. Retired firefighter, did you have commentary to share, sir?
Yes, I was going to make a report on the idea of what non-white people possibly get in trouble for being accused of stealing. Of anything of that sort. Just want to start off by saying, as everybody would probably know, that white people are experts in that field. From a historical standpoint, on race of white supremacy, as well as on the subject itself, on a workplace level, they have access to that test. They have access to those items. They make the inventory. The first hands it goes into, for the most part, is a white person's hands, items, that sort of thing. And they're going to vigilantly work to look out for competition, even other white people, that is not a part of whatever they're doing. And they're definitely going to keep an eye on non-white people who may have heard about what's going on and try to get in on whatever that particular larceny project is. I have been close to it
I can recall one of my first jobs. This is during the time, you know, before computers, that sort of thing. It was a very convenient job. I think I was in 10th grade, and at that time at Miami-Dade Public Schools, it was so many high school kids that they had to have two shifts. And as 10th graders was on the second shift, so you didn't start school until something like 12:20. So I had a part-time job in the morning, cleaning up a department store. Now, mind you, the black person who was the full-time employee, he was allowed to employ about five of us black males from the same general area as was reported, a person that came on your show from Richmond Heights, black males. So you got to imagine, you know, in hindsight, that they were paying attention to us the moment when we set foot into the department store. At that time, it was, you know, it's not nobody in the department store except for the cleaning crew, and the supervisor of everybody was this white male. I vaguely remember on what his name was, but I think they called him Sarge. And primarily they had been eavesdropping and watching us all the while. And some of the guys were shoplifting 8-track tapes. They would put it in plastic and put it in the mop bucket and take it out there to the car of the guy who would pick us up, you know, that sort of thing. And this went on for about several weeks. I normally would quit a job during that time when I was growing up, when football season started, because I was a football player. And so I left the job. And then next thing I hear, about 2 weeks afterwards, that all of those guys got arrested. All of those guys got arrested for various reasons, for shoplifting, various things. And like I said, they are watching you. They are watching you the moment you get employed, you know, either directly or indirectly. But they pay attention to black people, you know, as far as they're concerned. There was another particular incident that actually took place. And these things happen very subtly, very subtly, just like what the previous caller was talking about, and how she says she appreciates the idea of reading the rules that's on the job. Because if you neglect to do that and you basically cause a violation that you really didn't fully know, you just figured it was something kind of innocent, like, you know, that sort of thing, it can really harm you. Fire call, warehouse. It happened to been a warehouse that stored lobsters in boxes. It was something like, can you imagine, just thousands of boxes of lobsters, and in those boxes is about 10 lobsters apiece. Now, the warehouse did get some damage, but to the refrigerators where the lobsters were kept, it wasn't that much damage. Now, all the while, this was a big fire. So the night before, some of the employees just, you know, kind of like didn't say anything, as some of the guys were just, you know, taking some of the boxes after they put the fire out, taking some of the boxes, that sort of thing. And the crew that I was on is primarily all black. I noticed, and for the most part, it was like the employees of the warehouse was almost like allowing, yeah, guys, y'all take some of the boxes, that sort of thing like that. And that was, you know, kind of like encouraging, that sort of thing. But I noticed they were just the feeling, you know, that how some was looking later on, you know, as some of the guys was picking up some of the boxes. And I've just figured that it something that I shouldn't be doing, you know, from that standpoint. And there were some complaints to the fire department from that business, not necessarily the workers, but the managers, you know, that sort of thing. And so, like I said, there's just something if you have a just a slight thought that something can go awry very quickly, then you better stop. You better really look into it and pay attention to it and recall the policies and procedures, because it depends on who is complaining. If they complain, they would go right at you and you'd be without a job. You'd be without a job. And not only that, you could get arrested, which would really harm that person from getting another job. It'll make it very tough, if impossible, you know, as far as that concern. And so that those just some of the reports that I was reminded of when I heard the earlier report. Thank you.
Absolutely. That is one of Mr. Fuller's 10 stops is no stealing. I think he says it for that very reason. And again, no one does stealing better than whites. But he does have that in the 10 stops. I think part of it is for that very reason, on the way to being universal man and universal woman. Just saying that racists already have traps for that. They do all the stealing. So, of course, they encourage us to steal, and then they get to do the whammy on us afterwards. I'm not surprised that they didn't try to
including cheating on tests.
Oh,
including
absolutely.
Cheating on tests. There was an experience about that took place. Mind you now, and this was during the paper age, that was pretty easy to get the answers. And whites had been doing that for decades. They've been doing that for decades. Somehow two black males got in on it, and they actually got promoted from the answers they put on the test. And unfortunately, what took place with one, he had a fight with his wife, who worked for the county, and you know what she did. she reported him to the fire department, and from there they got both of them, you know, as far as that concerned. You know, and like I said, all the while they were oodles of white people who were cheating on this test, on promotion exams, on exams for different skills that are needed on the fire department. You have to take a test for, you know, that sort of thing. And yeah, you got to be real careful about that kind of stuff.
Context of white supremacy. Absolutely. Be codified in the workplace. And remember, we are under surveillance at all times. Extremely important to be mindful of that. I know a lot of us can kind of easily forget that. Whites will encourage us to get comfortable and forget that sort of thing. And then we end up getting in trouble. Keep that in mind at all times. We are under surveillance. And what does it mean to be white? Let's see. Other folks who dialed in have commentary, questions, comments on anything that's been shared thus far or their own experience? While we're waiting for folks to get their thoughts, number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I know I had forgotten. I did want to mention, I did think that was excellent illustration of black self-respect. Stacy in London attempting to inform the non-white coworker, like, you know, hey, this is another way that they might practice racism. If you submit that you want time off and they don't approve it, and then you take the time off anyway, that can be one of the ways that they come after you in a punitive manner in trying to help out other non-white people as you can to be disciplined and be on the lookout for those type of tricks that they'll have different ways of reprimanding non-white people on the job, sharing that information, that black self-respect where you can, always important, and just learning how the job works, learning the different policy and procedure. But sometimes they will even have different policies that are not written down per se, even though they are known and implemented. And that's why I said sometimes you might have to develop a resource or two, even, you know, someone classified as white, where you can get some of the extra information, because that might be the type of thing that maybe it's in policy and procedure, maybe it's not. That if you don't have that, your leave already approved, that, you know, you could get in trouble if you just decide not to show up. Very important details, super important. Other folks have commentary that they wanted to share. Still need time to get their thoughts together.
Can I observe?
Yes, sir. Caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners, and callers. I wanted to start out with there was an incident that was shared to me by an older black female that works at the job. We have the workplace racism discussions outside of work, and she was saying that the, I guess the assistant to the personnel manager warden, she came around, and it seems like she has this pattern of interacting with black females. Main example is recently, at least, there was, I guess, they were ordering like this barbecue or something like that in the other side of the building. So it's this, I guess, a black business that delivers the barbecue. So she said, I'm going to ask my black friends first, you know, they want any barbecue. So this white woman, the assistant, she comes around there. She's saying in a loud tone, because see, when you're speaking in a loud tone like that, your intent is to get someone to respond. So it's like, whoa, y'all got a barbecue? That looks good. Nobody asked me if I wanted any. So she used a metaphor, and she said she walked past her, and she gave her like a look that was like, you know, and she was giving her a look that sliced her to pieces. And like she said, the black female was like, oh no, oh no. And she was like, no, I don't really mess around with her or something. So that was a metaphor she used. She said it was like it cut her to pieces. So, but she said to play it off, she made it seem like she was having a stomach ache. So I thought that was interesting. My next one is there was a discussion about the luncheon that happened today. And the, I guess I'll just call her a white person, because she's in a relationship, Area 8 relationship, with a white man. So they were talking about the plasticware, not silverware really, but the plates and stuff. So she was like, well, since they imposed this holiday on us, maybe they'll have some supplies ready or whatever. So this report was from my mom and another black female. They're like, what do you mean imposed? Like, oh, you know, that's not what I meant. And even the white woman was saying, yeah, you know, what do you mean by that? So she apparently, I guess, started, you know, getting quiet or whatever. And the other black female says, you crackers aren't going to ruin this. This is going to be spectacular. So everybody just got quiet, I guess. And nobody responded. So that's like, I guess that's what I'm hearing, that it's been real quiet at the counter. So my next one is, when I had came out of the committee on the 11th, January 11th, Friday, the black female, I guess the departmental manager, supervisor, assistant supervisor, she was saying, wow, I didn't know, this would ever become, a reality. You know, I've been working here 17, 18 years and this never been done. So she was very enthusiastic and said, I can't wait to see what you all come up with. I want to bring, a nice dish and contribute. So a couple days ago, maybe like 2 days ago, one black female asks her, and she's in her 50s, so she's like, what are you bringing? What are you going to bring? I said, oh, I don't put my name on nothing. So she said it on the way, walking toward my desk as though she was wanting a response, in which I didn't give. So she was going to get one of the old micro films to look up an old document. So I'm like, it was like some hostility there. So I didn't say anything. So I wonder where that came from. But I concluded that there were a number of whites in my department who are systematically withholding participation. And I think the theory is, if I were to mention it, and if I were to mention racism, they would have used her as a victim reference, what I call, like, to say, hey, this black person, she's doing it too, so you can't say it's racism. But the event happened today, and I would say it was successful, but out of the two buildings, the one where my mom works at, I think it was a lot more professionally done, I can say. And it looks like the clerk was upset that the racist women didn't want to participate more in my building. So you even have some of the white females trying to go to the other building to get food in a plate so that they will probably get a photo out to take a picture to get in the circuit rider to make it look like they were in support. Whereas why would you go to another building if you already brought a food product for the one that you already work at? So a lot of racist confusion there. And my next one is, there's a personnel regulations disclaimer at the end of the, it's because it's the same on the old policy and the new one. It says changes to the personnel regulations. And I don't know if I read this, but I wanted to really share it. It says, the clerk may add, revoke, or modify policies from time to time. The clerk's personnel office will make every effort to apprise employees of such changes in a timely manner via the office newsletter or other method is practicable. However, changes to the personnel regulations will be effective upon approval of the clerk, regardless of notification. So I really wanted to share that again, because that's, once again, like, a lot of confusion going on there. Like, they can just go and change anything and they don't have to tell us. Basically, that's what they're saying. So, hey, if you sign it, we can just beat up on you any kind of way we want. And then when you come to question us about it, we'll be like, hey, you signed it, dude. You signed it, buddy. And that's all I have for now. And thanks for allowing me to share.
So you signed it, buddy. Tough nut. Don't read. What was the major difference you noted in the two buildings? You said the building where your mother works was the celebration, the MLK holiday celebration was done in a more professional manner. Like, what specifically was, I guess, better about how they did things?
I think, like, the how it was furnished, like, it was the table sheets and the quotes they had from Dr. King and the images and the pictures, and even the food looked like it was a lot more optional foods. Like, it was a lot more vegetables and fruits and certain types of lean meats, it even looks like. And where we were, it was very, like, limited. It wasn't not too many food options. And that was the thing that people kept mentioning throughout the day, that, oh, you should all go to this courthouse for that one, because I think the clerk was too ashamed. ashamed to admit that there was too many white women racists that didn't want to contribute their resources to bring food to the one in my building, which is where the idea came from. So, like, see, my thing is, when I came into work this morning, they were all standing in a circle talking about how they're going to, who's going to be chosen to do the birthday celebrations this year. See, but they're talking about that. But when it comes to Dr. King luncheon, no one's really talking about that. So the hypocrisy is there, of course, and the supervisor, I said, people are scared here. They're not going to tell you the truth, or they just don't care. And I think the majority of them just don't really care. And what I meant is that they are racists. So, that's all I have.
That word impose, since one of the suspected race soldiers, white woman, or I guess that was the cowbell one, but whatever, where she said, well, since they've imposed this on us, the word impose, definition that I have, force something unwelcome or unfamiliar to be accepted or put in place. Dr. King, 2019, still unwelcome. Wow. And at the courthouse, no less, that's the attitude that this has been imposed. We would rather talk about the birthday celebrations for the 2019 calendar year. Got to sit around and talk about Dr. King. We didn't even want the holiday. That's what I put in the description last week. It was John McCain. The lame was one of them. It was tons of whites who felt the exact same way. This has been imposed. This is not the way we want things done at all. Honoring this Negro and having a holiday. Are you serious? I think they have some parts of the country. They still have Dr. King's holiday on Robert E. Lee Day. I know they did in Virginia for a long time. I wouldn't be surprised if it was like that in Florida, but very interesting seeing that difference in response, particularly even saying that much to the supervisor. Like, wow, that's if it's enough that he noted, like, wow, people are not even eager to participate. We don't even have that many dishes at the courthouse. We're supposed to be all about justice, and there is no enthusiasm at all for the holiday for the drum major for justice. Hypocrisy, word of the day. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary you would like to share, anything, or if anybody has any other MLK job stories, that would be grand too. But any other thoughts, suggestions from what we've heard thus far this week? Anything else, sir? No other comments, suggestions?
Yes, I didn't hear the question.
Oh, I didn't have a question. I asked if folks had comments, suggestions, thoughts on, you know, what's been shared thus far. Yeah, definitely no question. Grant, I know I missed a caller who had a hand up earlier. If you want to dial back in, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I tweeted, even though they said, like, literally minutes before we went live today, they said the so-called shutdown was supposed to be wrapping up, and I tweeted that if you could imagine how whites would have been responding if you had had an environment where tens of thousands of whites are not getting their paychecks, working and not being compensated, and even a small number of people think that it's this nigger in the White House who is to blame for why this is happening. Wow. All of those death threats that he was getting, historic levels of death threats that he was getting while he was president. I can only imagine what that would look like if he had been the one hanging out in the White House while you had, what was it, I think a 35-day so-called shutdown system of race. And I, even with all that, still no gripes with all of these white people who are crying. Literally, NPR's had interviews of white people crying, and we don't know where we're going to get our children for birthdays and not being paid, and we've missed two paychecks, and we're about to be broke, and what are we going to do? And they've got them sounding as uncertain as the Negras. Same type of stress that they put deliberately on black people so that you can't plan and that you don't know what you're going to do when you're constantly stressed out. All of that, and I still wasn't really hearing, this guy's got to go. Trump is out of here. Was not hearing that at all. It was just, let's just get this taken care of, and then 4 more years. System of racism. Let's see. Draptomania, did you have commentary that you wanted to share, ma'am?
Yes. The young lady from Canada, she was talking about the abuse that she was experiencing on her job. And she was wondering what the term is, which she could call that term of harassment that she's experiencing. And I've been doing research on narcissistic abuse. So one of the terms that they use, but they usually use this term in reference to a relationship, but of course relationships are not just intimate relationships. So here's the term. The term is called hoovering. And it's a hoovering is a technique that that is named after the Hoover vacuum cleaner, and it is used by narcissists and other manipulative people in order to suck their victims back into a relationship with them. Hoovering is often done after the silent treatment is given or the victim has left them. The behavior often starts off subtle and unassuming and is done through voicemail, text messages, email, phone calls, notes, other people, or through any other form of possible communication with the victim, because the narcissist knows the victim's weak spots. They will generally tend to target these areas in order to reopen communication. Once communication is reopened, the narcissist generally promises to change or whatever. So here's one of the common hoovering techniques they might use is text messages, pretending to be concerned. I know she was saying that these women constantly keep calling her, asking her the same questions. They use text messages, acting like nothing is happening. Hey, stranger, this is one example. Hey, stranger, long time no talk to, or hey, what's going on? Text messages or on or about special occasions, holidays, or just things like that, like the different questions, like how they constantly ask, have been asking her questions, acting as if they're concerned about, or but what they're doing, they're being, they're prying. So this is a technique that's used in order to, it's a form of harassment. And I hope that's helpful. She can look into it a little bit more also. I just thought maybe that that might be of some help to her.
Much obliged, Draftomania. Hoovering. I've not heard that term myself. That was me in Toronto who asked that question. I was, when you originally said it, I was thinking Hoover as in J. Edgar Hoover, the former head of the FBI, because I thought that would have also been applicable. He was in charge of the COINTELPRO program and was directly responsible for the demise of Marcus Garvey and many other black people, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. included. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the vacuum cleaner, we'll take that one. That would definitely apply as well. But yeah, that's why, regardless of what we call it, hoovering will work fine. Racists, I have seen that technique, especially when it looks like you might be trying to get some distance, just coming back and coming back and coming back to see if they can reestablish that connection and sucking information out of you.
Absolutely.
Other folks, let's see if you either had any final comments, thoughts, questions you wanted to make sure that you get in. Feel free.
Hi, Gus. Can I be heard? The calling for Logic can go. That's fine.
Oh, you go ahead.
Okay. I'll try and be quick. Gus, it was just about the call on Sunday. If you can just let me know which time suits you, obviously offline. And then Dreptomania reminded me of a correction that I needed to make. I think a long time ago, probably around about 2016, I had been giving an update and I was mentioning the use of the word microaggression. Now, I must be honest that I had not heard of that word before that point, and subsequently have gone back through older programs of the cows and heard mention of the word microaggression, and I'd probably heard it being used in the UK before, but I'd never paid attention to it. It never entered my psyche, and I tend not to focus on words like that I apply to what I'm going to call the diversity industry, such as microaggression, because particularly in the UK, lots of terms get used and become fashionable for the moment and pretty much mean nothing. But anyway, I had made reference to it because I was developing the grievance that I had submitted, and I was trying to think about how to reference racism without actually making a direct accusation of racism. And they understood it because that term does get used in the workplace. However, when I did go through the grievance, it was used as a way of directly trivializing some of the examples that I'd given of the abuse that I'd received by, you know, so they basically, I think what you've always said on the program, Gus, is that these terms are used to trivialize and cover up racist acts of terrorism. And so my correction, I guess, is that, you know, would I use it again in the future? Probably not. But if I did, I'd be very considered about the way I'm using it. And it wasn't that I didn't have a rationale for why I did it. But maybe if I'd been more explicit, it wouldn't have changed the outcome anyway, which is the reality, because they were never going to, you know, find in my favour. However, yeah, it's just a correction. Should people be listening to the archives? Because I had used it as an example, and then, you know, that was in developing the grievance, and then obviously the reality of using that word and just how it can be turned into an attack on you as the person in receipt of the terrorism. I'll mute my language, guys.
Stacy in London, 3:38 a.m. Saturday morning. Microaggressions. Talked about that. Words are very important. Caller in Florida, thank you for your patience, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. I also been wanting to share a practice that's been done by white and non-white people. I know maybe somebody can relate to this, like when you're working in a customer service position, you know, I'm coming from break or whatever. And I know recently I've had one of the black females say, how can I help you? You know, like saying basically, you know, you either here to get some criminal records or something, like you don't work right. You don't work in here. But that's a behavior that's been mimicked from the white supremacist, where they'll make these racist jokes asking you, like, do you work here? You know, how can I help you? Like, can I help you, sir? Like, I've noticed that kind of thing going on. But it hasn't been too frequent. It's just been spaced out, like, a couple years ago. But I've never really had a black person do that. That was new to me. And my next one was, there was a white person said that when she used to work at the state attorney office, she was in an administrative position, and she said that she used to be, I guess encouraged, I'll use the word encouraged, to use words to say something in another way, basically saying something in another way that they wanted her to say more directly, but using different words. And I was like, wow, that's very interesting. So she said she had to step down from that position. And basically, I believe what she was talking about is practice racism. But I guess she said she was told to, I guess, put out certain messages to force things. She said force. And basically, it was just being very well versed with language and using certain terms and phrases to almost like control people and to bring about a certain result. Like, that's the way she was saying it. Because I thought about that, and that's almost similar to like my older supervisor, where I think I shared this where a younger white man called him a mental terrorist. So, because he'll say something to you, and it'll come to a point where you won't even have a response. But I had a quote that was in the recent newsletter, a Circuit Rider, and they took this out of context majorly, because it just looked like it was something that they didn't write. That don't come from one of their minds. But they used it from apparently this person named Abigail Van Buren, and it's called Just for the Day. And I wanted to just read the quote. It says, "Just for the day, I will live through this day only. I will not brood about yesterday or obsess about tomorrow. I will not set far-reaching goals or try to overcome all of my problems at once. I know that I can do something for 24 hours that will overwhelm me if I had to keep it up for a lifetime. Just for today, I will be happy. I will not dwell on thoughts that depress me. If my mind fills with clouds, I will chase them away and fill it with sunshine." Like, huge metaphor. "Just for today, I will accept what is. I will face reality. I will correct those things I can correct and accept those I cannot. Just for today, I will improve my mind. I will read something that requires effort, thought, and concentration. I will not be a mental loafer. Just for today, I will make a conscious effort to be agreeable. I will be kind and courteous to those who cross my path, and I'll not speak ill of others. I will improve my appearance, speak softly, and not interrupt when someone else is talking. Just for today, I will refrain from improving anybody but myself." And then it says, "Just for today, I will do something positive to improve my health. If I'm a smoker, I'll quit. If I'm overweight, I will eat healthfully. If only for today, and not only that, I will get off the couch and take a brisk walk, even if it's only around the block." And then it lastly says, "Just for today, I will gather the courage to do what is right and take the responsibility for my own actions." But they didn't put that whole quote in the Circuit Rider. They just put just small like stanzas and sentences from it. So I had to do some research to find the whole quote. So that's all I wanted to share. Thanks.
That's interesting. That seems like they could have made that. It's not like the longest thing ever. They could have made a smaller font and got that in. Maybe they were being cheap with the newsletter. They were trying to conserve wording for the ink or whatever this time. But I always find it suspicious when things are taken out of context, that they're leaving things out from a quote. And with some of the metaphors that you mentioned that were in that segment as well. White people and the skillful use of words. Cannot say it enough. Being able to get things done. Mental terrorists. Being able to manipulate people's behavior. All with the skillful use of words. They employ a lot of time and energy in just that process alone. In using words. What to say. What not to say. I was just listening to a different podcast. They were talking about exclusively about the workplace environment. And they were talking about just the wording as opposed to asking employees, how safe do you think the environment is, where everybody would say, oh, yeah, we think it's fine. No problems. As opposed to, is there anything in your work environment that could be made safer? And they would get tons of responses. Just people would pour in. Just changing the wording and how you ask a question, you can get more information. You have whites, that's what they do. They just sit around and study that. They are masters. Do not take that for granted. And that's why I say it's so important to remember that in terms of the surveillance in the workplace environment, whether they're watching, whether they're coming to ask questions, really being mindful about that. They are racists. Even at the courthouse, the woman, she was doing experiments wearing different clothes or wearing the same clothing. That's what it was, to see if somebody was going to say something, and then wrote a debrief afterwards to let people know, oh, yeah, I've been conducting an experiment here. That's what we're dealing with in the workplace. Other folks have any other thoughts they wanted to get in before we wrap things up?
Gus, I just wanted to, Gus, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to say what he just read, the caller from Florida, that's adopted from a 12-step program. They, I think it's from, you know, I know it's from Narcotics Anonymous program, but that, just for the day, they must have adopted it to another program, it sounds like. I'm not sure what program they adopted it to, but that's where Just for the Day originated from, a 12-step program. I'm not sure why they was using it in his newsletter at work. Was it motivation to help people, you know, motivate people to do something? Or I'm not really sure what context it was used in, but that I just wanted to say that's where it comes from. The origins of that Just for the Day comes from Narcotics Anonymous.
Hmm. How interesting. My guess would be, since many of the suspected racists at the courthouse felt that the King holiday was imposed on them, maybe they felt there would be a spike in drinking. So they put this in and said, we know this is a tough one. We've stressed you all out. We don't want it to be that rough on you. Just hang in. Just for today, hang in. Don't fall off the wagon. We'll get through it together. And then things will be back to normal at the courthouse. No more King holidays, no more other Negro holidays. Maybe that was it. Other folks, any other thoughts, suggestions before we wrap things up? Thank goodness they didn't have twerking. I remember that one, Stacy in the UK, when they did the twerking for Black History Month. And it does not get any better than tacky anywhere in the world. No better than tacky for these holidays, as they are called. If folks are...
Gus.
Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, it just came back to me. I don't know how I forgot. I discovered this week that my organization has a book club. And I was reading the blog that had talked about all the books that they had read this year, or 2018. And September's book of the month was The Hate U Give. And I sat and chuckled. And there were so many books that they had read for the year, which was actually focused on the centenary of the women's right to vote. So it was a really interesting selection. included Color Purple, something about Rwanda, which I can't remember the title. There were just lots of non-white focused celebrations of so-called women. And I will get the full list, actually, because it was really interesting to see how many books about non-white people were on that list and how they're making the links to, I guess, a celebration of women's achievement. But yeah, the Color Purple, definitely the Color Purple's on there, but also The Hate U Give. It keeps on giving. I'll mute my language.
It keeps on giving. Wow. I don't know if they're reading, like they just have a book and everybody that's in the company like reads it, and do they get to write their comments online, or just as you see different people throughout the building, like, oh, are you reading The Hate U Give? Like, wow, that Angie Thomas is something. Wow, I love Star's character and that no good Maverick. I wish he was. I mean, I don't know if it's that or if if they have a session where they get together at some point and chat. But wow, I would love to hear what they had to say about The Hate U Give and even The Color Purple. That's I reckon that would be Alice Walker right there. But yeah, I would. That's fascinating. I would love to check out the book list if you get the whole thing. I've never been on a job, and I've never heard about a job having a book list. Although I am sure there are some really spiffy tech jobs right here in Seattle or San Francisco, some of the other hubs, where they probably have all kinds of incredible book clubs. They probably give you a Kindle when you join the organization. So. Yeah, if anybody else has a book club on your job, let's see what's on their book list. Anything else before we wrap up? Soon, folks, our grand again will be here for the compensatory call-in Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll catch up on what's gone down the last 7 days and exchange views with victims of white supremacy. Thanks, folks, for sharing a bit of your Friday evening. Hope it was worthy of your time and energy. I would encourage folks, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Racists, they are waging war against us all the time. Dr. Welsing, her name was mentioned, and many others, they would strongly prompt us, let's take care of our brain computers so that we can solve this problem immediately. We have got very cunning, ruthless terrorists attacking us. We will need all of our brain cells to get this problem solved. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we are in a vehicle, driver, or passenger. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. Again, the information for the 2010 Cal's Yoga Retreat was mailed. If you did not get the email, untiljustice@gmail.com, send me an email and I will get it to you promptly. If you have questions, gripes, concerns, let me know, and we will try to get them answered post-haste. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.